So what I want to do in this book launch is focus on chapters 4 to 6, just sort of explain briefly the contents of those chapters in order to show how Catholicism does lead to a deeper understanding of reality and how we can use that as Catholics to argue for the truth of our faith. Okay, so let's look at some religious worldviews and how the God ideas of religion affect the ability of humans to know reality. You know, you hear sometimes people today say, we all worship the same God, you know, it's no big deal. No, in fact, we don't worship the same God. And what idea you form of God makes a huge impact on the way you look at reality and the way you live your life. And that's one thing that I really try to bring home in the book, is how the God idea is given to certain peoples by their religion affects the conclusions they draw about reality and whether or not they fall into irrationality. Okay, so let's look at the pantheists, those who believe that God is the same as the universe, is the same as everything. It makes you, the idea that we and God and the universe are all one makes you very confused about reality. Father Yaki, he did a historical study and he said, what do all the pagan nations before Christ have in common? He said effectively two things. If we look at what they believed, they all thought that the universe was the ultimate reality. So the universe is God. And they also believe that the universe has cycles that go on forever. That the universe is kind of in an eternal holding pattern which just goes around and around and around and around forever. It's always been doing that. It always will do that. Why do they think that the universe goes in cycles? Well, because there's so many cycles in nature. In the four seasons, the rising and setting of the sun, the waxing and waning of the moon, the rotations of the heavens, the births and deaths of organic life. There's so many cycles that we observe in the world around us. So they say maybe that cyclical nature is built into the very fabric of reality. Maybe we are on a wheel that just goes round and round and round and round forever. Why do they think that the universe is the ultimate reality? Well, they did know that something had to be eternal. Just think about it. What if nothing was eternal? Then you go back in time, and then there's nothing. And if there was nothing at any time, if there's absolutely nothing, then nothing would be here right now. So there has to be something, at least something, that has always existed for there to be anything that exists right now. They thought, well, it's probably the universe, because the universe goes in circles. And you think about a circle, and a circle has something eternal about it. You could go in circles forever. If you're moving in a circle, it seems like you go on forever. The example that I tend to use is, imagine you're on a racetrack, okay? And you've got a car with infinite fuel, and the track is circular, and you've got your foot on the pedal at a certain distance, and your hand turned on the steering wheel at this position. If you were just frozen in that position, and you had infinite fuel, in theory, you could go around forever. And ever, in theory. Okay, if this is your view of reality, if you look at reality and think, well, we're just going around in circles for all eternity, what effect will that have on your knowledge, on your desire to explore reality and learn from reality? The effects are not good. The world would seem completely incomprehensible for you because the world doesn't have a mind behind it. It's like a machine that's just going around in circles, doing its thing forever and ever. And you say, why is this going on? Like, I don't know. Because there's no God behind it. There's no mind behind it. It's just doing its thing. If the world seems incomprehensible, then humans are not motivated to investigate reality. Would you try to read a book that just repeated the words "see, spot, run" over and over and over on every page? You would just give up. You're just like, I can't figure this out. This just makes no sense to me. If the world seems incomprehensible, humans have difficulty finding meaning in life. How would you feel being stuck on a merry-go-round that went around forever and whose course you can never change? There's no one who's controlling it, and you're just stuck on it. That's how reality would tend to look for these pantheists. And so that's how you get something like Buddhism. So the Buddhists, in their religion, they, which is a pantheist religion, they feel that the best thing to do if you're on the merry-go-round is to close your eyes and try to escape as far as possible from reality. In other words, reality seems so meaningless and hostile to them that their best solution is to escape, to try to reach nirvana. So this is a radically pessimistic view of reality, and it's based on their view of the universe, that the universe is identified with is the ultimate reality. In the end, those cultures that I mentioned, the Egyptians, the Mayans, the Incans, and so on, they were not able to discover the laws of nature. They were not able to formulate philosophy. They ended up inventing a bunch of not-so-nice stories about reality, mythologies, because they could not understand it. And this only made the problem worse. So in other words, they were not able to understand reality very well at all. And I'm saying it's because of their view, their pantheist view. All right, what about the Greek geeks? The Greek geeks, on the other hand, they were able to say, let's take all these mythologies and set them to the side, and let's see what my human reason can do. They were able to separate reason from religion. Plato especially, if you read Plato's Republic, Socrates is in a discussion with somebody, and he's saying, should we teach Homer to our children? And the man, he's saying, I don't think we should teach Homer because Homer makes the gods look ridiculous. And we don't want the gods to look ridiculous. So they were able to set mythology to one side and consider, what can my reason alone learn about reality? This led them to look for a first principle in the universe instead of saying that the universe is the first principle. Here's what they came up with. They said, let's have a contest. Let's have a philosophical contest. The national sport in Greece was philosophy. That's what they just got up in the morning to do. Let's do philosophy. Let the best man win. I form my own school. I've got the best answers. I have my students, and so on. So the first one, he said, hey, dude, I think it's water. I think everything comes from water. I mean, water is important. And since I've been living in Australia for 9 years, I tend to agree. I think water is really, really important. But I think it's a bit of an exaggeration to say that everything is water and comes from water. I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. Pythagoras, he said, it's numbers. It's all numbers. Numbers make us be what we are. We're all a number, right? And number give us our own individuality. He loved mathematics. I mean, if you love mathematics, that's what you do. You say everything is a number. Empedocles says love makes the world go round. Love and hate, those are the ultimate realities. Plato, he says it's forms. It's these pure essences. It's like humanness and goodness and beautiness. Those are the things that make the world be what it is. Okay, this was good. It was good that they even asked the question, what is the ultimate principle, and they tried to answer it. But still the answers were too primitive. There was a lack of realism blocking the way. Socrates and Plato tended to be idealists, whereas Thales and his folks tend to be empiricists. Then we get Aristotle, who has the nickname the philosopher. If somebody called me the man, because I was the best man ever, they call Aristotle the philosopher because he was the best philosopher ever. My claim is that because he discovered the way humans know reality, he was able to formulate the best rules for discovering reality, for discovering the truth. He answered the question, what is the ultimate cause of everything, by a first unmoved mover. He asked himself, why does anything move at all? Where does all movement come from? And what he realized was that it can't be anything that moves. If you move yourself, then you cannot be the ultimate source of movement. Because movement, anything that moves, has to have something that's passive. And if we want to have an ultimate source of movement, it has to be something that's purely active. Something that can move other things without being moved itself. An unmoved mover. I can use the example. I was driving down from Goulburn today to Sydney on the M5. And, you know, I come from the United States. You probably noticed from my accent. And in the United States, they love things that are entirely too sweet, like Krispy Kreme donuts. So I was driving down the M5 today, and I went under an underpass. And on the underpass, they had this billboard with a whole tray of Krispy Kreme donuts dripping with glaze. I looked at that billboard, and my mouth just started watering. Yeah. So that billboard is like an unmoved mover. It's not doing anything. It's just sitting up there and saying, hey, here I am. And yet it's moving all the people that pass by. Everybody looks at the billboard, their mouth starts watering. Even though the billboard hasn't done anything, the mouth starts watering because it's attracted them to something. The people who are driving are attracted to these donuts that are very bad for your health. You know, we have these canisters at the seminary of choco biscuit spread for your brekkie, and it has the health rating on there, 0.5 out of 5. You know, that's the health rating. I'm like, why do you even have an health rating if it's that bad? But we don't let that stop us. So Aristotle called this first unmoved mover the prime mover, and he said, this being that's the source of all movement must be eternal, intellectual, perfect, and unchanging. And that's pretty similar to God. His philosophy represents the highest point that the pagan pantheistic thought was able to attain, and he did it by adopting the realist mentality, using his sense data and his mind to their highest capacity. But he also had some stuff-ups, unfortunately. Let me explain where he went wrong. So I give Aristotle a pretty high rating on his epistodometer. He does pretty well. But the main problem is that this prime mover is still, he was like the true God in some respects, but in others he was not. The problem was this prime mover was like the billboard. He was just sitting up there, and he's attracting the universe to move. He's just kind of like there, but he's not pushing things. The Christian God, we know, is a creator. So he actually makes things. But the God of Aristotle didn't make anything. He's just hanging out. And because he's so beautiful and he's so awesome, everything in the universe tries to imitate him. And that's why it moves. That's why everything in the universe moves, is it's trying to be like that prime mover. It just has some connection to that prime mover and wants to be like him. So I already mentioned the billboard example. The consequence was that Aristotle blocked the way for starting science, what we know today as science. Because he saw God as moving everything by attraction, he explained all movement in terms of attraction. So when you throw a rock, for instance, and you try to explain how the rock moves, today we all know, well, the rock has a certain force, you know, that pushes it, the force coming from our hand, that's just a very intuitive explanation for us, right? That's not how Aristotle explained it. He says the rock has a natural desire to be on the ground. The rock is attracted to be on the ground. And the air outside the rock is pushing it for a while, but then the rock's desire to be on the ground, its attraction to be on the ground, overcomes the air after a time. Okay, so this was not a good explanation for the movement of the rock. And scientists, they try to explain movement. And if that's how you explain movement, then you're not doing science. You're not doing real science. So this explanation, because Aristotle was so fantastic and everybody respected him so much, he got everything right in logic, cosmology, metaphysics, he got everything right. They said, this must be right as well. And they took what he said as the gospel truth for effectively 1,500 years. And so science, as we know it today, was not discovered. Okay, well, that's where Catholics come in. Guess what? Catholics fixed Aristotle. Catholics fixed the problems that he had by using their knowledge of God that they had for revelation. So this is on the historical record. Catholics, we had from the get-go very advantages that Aristotle did not have. We know that the world is not eternal. We have to believe that there's a creation in time. We know that God is a creator. So he doesn't move the universe by being a billboard for the universe, for the entire universe, but he moves the universe by creating it and sustaining it in existence. He actually makes things to be what they are. And then we know that the material world is not an illusion and is not to be despised. The incarnation of our Lord Jesus Christ, where God assumed human material flesh, taught us, it teaches us, that the material world is to be respected. The material world has rights in its own domain. As a result, because of our God idea, the idea of God that's given to us by our Catholic faith, we are very optimistic about reality. We say there's an all-wise, intelligent God who's behind reality. And so it's intimately knowable. He is wisdom itself. He created everything that we see. Thus, there must be a deep intellectual order in the reality around us. Moreover, we were created by that same God. He made us in his image by conferring on us our minds, our purely spiritual faculty. When Genesis says that we're created in the image of God, it's talking about our mind, our soul. Okay? So, since we receive our ability to think from the same being who thought the world into existence, then the world must be very comprehensible.